he hissed, pulling back his hand, and Aelin grinned. "Welcome to Her Majesty's Army, Privateer Rolf." She gestured to the open door. "Shall we?" Aelin was insane, Dorian realized. Brilliant and wicked, but insane. And perhaps the greatest, most unremorseful liar he'd ever encountered. He'd felt her summons sweep through the world, felt fire hum against her skin. There was no mistaking who it belonged to, and there was no mistaking that it had gone right to the dead end, where the forces dwelling there would know there was one person alive with that kind of flame at her disposal, and track the magic back here. He didn't know what had triggered it, why she'd chosen now, but... But Rowan had informed Aelin how the Vogue haunted Rolf, how he had watched this city day and night, terrified of their return. So Aelin had used it to her advantage. The Mycenaeans. Holy gods. They were little more than a bedtime story and cautionary tale. But here they were, carefully hidden away, until Aelin had smoked them out. And as the pirate lord and queen of Terrasen shook hands, and she grinned at Rolf, Dorian realized perhaps he could do with a bit more wickedness and insanity, too. This war would not be won on smiles and manners. It would be won by a woman willing to gamble with an entire island full of people to get what she needed to save them all. A woman whose friends were equally willing to play along, to rip their souls to shreds if it meant saving the greater population. They knew the weight of the lives panicking around them if they gambled wrong. Aelin, perhaps more than anyone else. Aelin and Rolf stalked through the open tavern doorway and into the street beyond. Behind him, Fenris let out a low whistle. "God's help you, Rowan, that woman is..." Dorian didn't wait to hear the rest, as he followed the pirate and the queen into the street, Aedin and Lysandra trailing. Fenris kept at a distance from the others, but Gavriel remained close, his gaze still fixed on his son. Gods, they looked so much alike, moved alike, the lion and the wolf. Rolf barked to his men waiting in a line before him. "Every ship that can bear men sails now." He rattled off orders, delegating his men to various ships long bereft of crew to run them, including his own, while Aelin stood there, hands braced on her hips, watching them all. She said to the captain, "What's your fastest ship?" He pointed at his own. She held his stare, and Dorian waited for the wild, reckless plan. But she said without looking at any of them, "Rowan, Lysandra, Fenris, and Gavriel, you're with me. Aedin, you get on the northern watchtower and man the mounted harpoon. Any ship gets too close to the chain, you blast a hole through their godsdamned side." Dorian stiffened, as she at last addressed him, seeing the orders already in her eyes. He opened his mouth to object, but Aelin said simply, "This battle is no place for a king."
"And it's one for a queen."
There was no amusement, nothing but icy calm as she handed him a sword he hadn't realized she'd been carrying at her side. Damaris. Goldrin was still strapped across her back, its ruby glowing like a living ember, as she said, "One of us has to live, Dorian. You take the southern watchtower, stay at the base, and get your magic ready. Any forces that try to cross the chain, you take them out. Not with steel, but magic." He fastened Damaris to his sword belt, its weight foreign.
"And what are you going to do?"
he demanded. As if in answer, his power writhed in his gut, like an asp curling to strike. Aelin glanced at Rowan, at his tattooed hand. Rolf, get whatever iron chains you have left from your slave-mongering. We're going to need them. For her. For Rowan. As a check against their magic, if it got out of control. Because Aelin was going to sail that ship right into the heart of the enemy fleet and blow them all out of the water. Chapter 34. She was a liar and a murderer and a thief, and Aelin had a feeling she'd be called much worse by the end of this war. But as that unnatural darkness gathered on the horizon, she wondered if she might have bitten off more than she and all her fanged friends could chew. She did not give her fear an inch of space, did not do anything but let black fire ripple through her. Securing this alliance was only part of it. The other part, the bigger part, was the message. Not to Morath, but to the world. To any potential allies watching this continent, contemplating if it was indeed a lost cause. Today, her message would thunder across the realms. She was not a rebel princess, shattering enemy castles and killing kings. She was a force of nature. She was a calamity and a commander of immortal warriors of legend. And if those allies did not join with her, she wanted them to think of today, of what she would do, and wonder if they might find her on their shores, in their harbors one day too. They had not come 10 years ago. She wanted them to know she had not forgotten it. Rolf finished barking orders to his men and rushed aboard the Sea Dragon, Adian and Dorian hurtling for horses to carry them to their respective watchtowers. Aelin turned to Lysandra, the shifter calmly monitoring all. Aelin said quietly, "Do you know what I need you to do?" Lysandra's moss-green eyes were bright as she nodded. Aelin did not allow herself to embrace the shifter. Did not allow herself to so much as touch her friend's hand. Not with Rolf watching. Not with the citizens of this town watching, the lost Mycenaeans among them. So Aelin merely said, "Good hunting." Fenris let out a choked sound, as if he realized what she had indeed demanded of the shapeshifter. Beside him, Gabriel was still too busy staring after Adian, who hadn't so much as glanced at his father before fastening his shield and sword across his back, mounting a sorry-looking mare, and galloping for the watchtower. Aelin said to Rowan, the wind already dancing in the silver hair of her warrior prince, "We move now." So they did. People were panicking in the streets as the dark force took shape on the horizon. Massive ships with black sails, converging on the bay as if they were indeed carried on a preternatural wind. But Aelin, Lysandra close to her, stopped for the towering Sea Dragon, Rowan and his two companions falling into step behind them. People halted and gawped while they ascended the gangway, securing and rearranging their weapons. Knives and swords, Rowan's hatchet gleaming while he hooked it at his side. A bow and quiver full of black-feathered arrows that Aelin assumed Fenris could fire with deadly accuracy, and more blades. As they prowled onto the gently rocking deck of the Sea Dragon, the wood meticulously polished, Aelin supposed that together they formed a walking armory. Gabriel had no sooner set foot on board than the gangway was hauled up by Rolf's men. The others, seated on benches flanking the deck, lifted oars, two men to a seat. Rowan jerked his chin at Gabriel and Fenris, and the two wordlessly went to join the men, his cadre falling into rank and rhythms that were older than some kingdoms. Rolf stalked out a door that no doubt led to his chambers, two men behind him bearing enormous iron chains. Aelin strode for them. "Anchor them to the main mast, and make sure there's enough room for them to reach right
Here.
She pointed to where she now stood in the heart of the deck. Enough space clear of everyone. Enough space for her and Rowan to work. Rolf barked an order to begin rowing, glancing once at Fenris and Gavriel, who each manned an oar themselves, teeth bared as they threw their considerable strength into the motion. Slowly, the ship began moving, the others around them stirring as well. But they had to be out of the bay first, had to get past the boundary of Shipbreaker. Rolf's men looped the chains around the mast, leaving enough length to reach Aelin. Iron would provide a bite, an anchor to remind her who she was, what she was. Iron would keep her tethered when the sheer vastness of her magic, of Rowan's magic, threatened to sweep her away. The sea dragon inched over the harbor, the call and grunting of Rolf's men as they rowed drowning out the din of the town behind them. She flicked a glance toward either watchtower to see Dorian arrive, then Adian's golden hair racing up the outer spiral staircase to the enormous mounted harpoon at the top. Her heart strained for a moment, as she flashed between now and a time when she'd seen Sam running up those same stairs. Not to defend this town, but to wreck it. She shook off the icy grip of memory and turned to Lysandra, standing at the deck rail, watching her cousin as well. Now. Even Rolf paused his ordering at the word. Lysandra gracefully sat on the broad wooden railing, pivoted her legs over the side, and dropped into the water. Rolf's men rushed to the rail. People in boats flanking them did the same, spotting the woman plunge into the vivid blue. But it was not a woman who came out. Below, deep down, Aelin could make out the glow and shift and spread. Men began cursing. But Lysandra kept growing and growing beneath the surface, along the sandy harbor floor. Faster the men rowed. But the ship's speed was nothing compared to the speed of the creature that emerged from the waves. A broad jade-green snout, peppered with shredding white teeth, huffed a mighty breath, then arced back under the water, revealing a flash of a massive head and cunning eyes as she disappeared. Some men screamed. Rolf braced a hand on the wheel. His first mate, that sea dragon sword freshly polished at his side, dropped to his knees. Lysandra dove, and she let them see the long, powerful body that broke the surface bit by bit as she plunged down, her jade scales gleaming like jewels in the blinding midday sun. See the legend straight from their prophecies. The Mycenaeans would only return when the sea dragons did. And so Aelin had ensured that one appeared right in their god's damned harbor.
Holy gods, Fenris muttered from where he rode.
Indeed, that was about the only reaction Aelin could muster, as the sea dragon dove down deep, then swam ahead. For those were mighty fins, wings that Lysandra spread beneath the water, tucking in her small front arms and back legs, her massive spiked tail acting as a rudder. Some of Rolf's men were murmuring,
a dragon to defend our own ship, the legends of our fathers.
Indeed, Rolf's face was pale, as he stared toward where Lysandra had vanished into the blue, still clutching the wheel as if it'd keep him from falling. Two sea wyverns against one sea dragon. For all the fire in the world would not work beneath the sea, and if they were to stand a chance of decimating those ships, there could be no interference from beneath the surface.
Come on, Lysandra,
Aelin breathed, and sent a prayer to Temis, the goddess of wild things, to keep the shifter swift and unfaltering beneath the waves. Adian chucked off the shield from his back and slammed into the seat before the giant iron harpoon, its length perhaps a hand taller than him, its head bigger than his own. There were only three spears, He'd have to make his shots count. Across the bay, he could just make out the king taking up a position along the battlement on the lowest level of the tower. In the bay itself, Rolf's ship rode closer and closer to Shipbreaker's lowered chain. Adian stomped on one of the three operating pedals that allowed him to pivot the mounted launcher, gripping the handles on either side that positioned the spear into place. Carefully, precisely, he aimed the harpoon toward the very outer edge of the bay, where the two branches of the island leaned toward each other to provide a narrow passage into the harbor. Waves broke just beyond. A reef. Good for breaking ships against, and no doubt where Rolf would plant his ship, in order to fool Morath's fleet into skewering themselves on it. "What the hell is that?" one of the sentries manning the gunner breathed, pointing toward the bay waters. A mighty long shadow swept under the water, ahead of the sea dragon, faster than the ship, faster than a dolphin. Its long serpentine body soared through the sea, carried on wings that might have also been fins. Adian's heart stopped dead.
"It's a sea dragon,"
he managed to say. Well, at least he now knew what secret form Lysandra had been working on, and why Aelin had insisted on getting inside Brannan's temple. Not just to see the king, not just to reclaim the city for the Mycenaeans and Terrasen, but for Lysandra to study the life-size detailed carvings of those sea dragons, to become a living myth. The two of them. Oh, those crafty, scheming devils. A queen of legends, indeed.
How?
The sentry turned toward the others, babbling among themselves.
It's gonna defend us?
Lysandra approached Shipbreaker, still lowered under the surface, twirling and arcing, banking along rocks as if getting a feel for her new form. Getting a feel for it in whatever little time they had.
Yes,
Adian breathed, as terror flooded his veins.
Yes, she is.
The water was warm and quiet and ageless. And she was a scaled shadow that set the jewel-colored fish darting into their coral homes. She was a soaring menace through the water that made the white birds bobbing on the surface scatter into flight as they sensed her passing below. Sunbeams streamed in pillars through the water, and Lysandra, in the small part of her that remained human, felt as if she were gliding through a temple of light and shadow. But there, far out, carried on echoes of sound and vibration, she felt them. Even the larger predators of these waters flitted off, taking to the open seas beyond the islands. Not even the promise of water stained red could keep them in the path of the two forces about to collide. Ahead, the mighty links of Shipbreaker sagged into the deep, like the colossal necklace of some goddess leaning down to drink the sea. She had been reading about them, the long-forgotten and long-dead sea dragons. At Aelin's behest. Because her friend had known that strong-arming Rolf with the Mycenaeans would only get them so far. But if they were to wield the power of myth instead, its people might rally around it. And with a home to finally offer them, among these islands and in Terrasen. Lysandra had studied the carvings of the sea dragons at the temple, once Aelin had burned away the dirt on them. Her magic had filled in gaps the carvings didn't show, like the nostrils that picked apart each scent on the current, the ears that unraveled varying layers of sound. Lysandra swept for the reef just beyond the parted lips of the island. She'd have to retract the wings, but here she would make her stand. Here she would have to unleash every wild instinct, yielding the part of her that felt and cared. These beasts, however they were made, were only that, beasts, animals. They would not fight with morals and codes. They would fight to the death, and fight for survival. There would be no mercy, no compassion. She would have to fight as they did. She had done so before, had turned feral not just that day the glass castle had shattered, but the night she'd been captured, and those men had tried to take Evangeline. This would be no different. Lysandra dug her bone-shredding curved talons into the reef shelf to hold her position against the current's nudging, and peered into the silent blue stretching endlessly ahead. So she began her death vigil. Chapter 35. Perched on the rail of the Sea Dragon, gripping the rope ladder flowing from the looming mast, Aelin savored the cooling spindrift that sprayed her face as the ship plowed through the waves. Once the ship was clear of the others, Rowan had let his winds fill its sails, setting the Sea Dragon flying toward the mammoth chain. It was hard not to look back as they passed over the submerged chain, and then Shipbreaker began to rise from the water, sealing them out of the bay, where Rolf's other ship would wait safely behind the chain's line to guard the town now silently watching them. If all went well, they would only need this boat, she'd told Rolf. And if it went badly, then his ships wouldn't make a difference anyway. Tightly grasping the rope, Aelin leaned out, the vibrant blue and white below passing in a swift blur. Not too fast, she'd told Rowan. Don't waste your strength. You barely slept last night. He just leaned in to nip at her ear before sliding onto Gabriel's bench to concentrate. He was still there, his power letting the men cease their rowing and prepare for what swept toward them. Aelin again looked ahead, toward those black sails blotting the horizon. The word key at her chest murmured in response. She could feel them. Her magic could taste their corruption on the wind. No sign of Lysandra, but she was out there. The sun was blinding on the waves as Rowan's magic slowed, bringing them into a steady glide toward the two peaks of the island that curved toward each other. It was time. Aelin swung off the railing, boots thudding on the soaked wood of the deck. So many eyes turned to her, to the chains spread across the main deck. Rolf stalked toward her, descending from the raised quarter deck, where he'd been manning the wheel himself. She picked up a heavy iron chain, wondering who it had previously held. Rowan rose to his feet in a steady, graceful movement. He reached her when Rolf did. The captain demanded, "What now?" Aelin jerked her chin toward the ships near enough to make out figures crammed onto the various decks. Many, many figures. "We draw them in as close as we can. When you can see the whites of their eyes, you shout at us." Rowan added, "And then you lay anchor off the starboard side. Swing us around." "Why?" Rolf asked, as Rowan helped her fasten the manacle around her wrist. She balked at the iron, her magic twisting. Rowan gripped her chin between his thumb and forefinger, making her meet his unflinching gaze, even as he said to Rolf, "Because we don't want the masts in the way when we open fire. They seem like a rather important part of the ship." Rolf growled and stalked off. Rowan's fingers slid to cup her jaw, his thumb brushing her cheek. "We draw out our power, slow and steady."
"I know."
He angled his head, brows lifting. A half-smile curved his sinful mouth. "You've been spiraling down into your power for days now, haven't you?" She nodded. It had taken most of her focus, had been such an effort to stay in the present, to stay active and aware while she was burrowing down and down, drawing up as much of her power as she could without attracting any notice. I didn't want to take any chances here. Not if you were drained from saving Dorian.
I've recovered, I'll have you know, so this morning's little display...
A way to take off the power's full edge, she said wryly, and make Rolf piss himself.
He chuckled and released her face to pass her the other manacle. She hated its ancient, hideous touch on her skin, on his, as she clamped it around his tattooed wrist.
Hurry, Rolf said, from where he'd returned to his spot at the wheel.
Indeed, the ships were gaining on them. No sign of those sea wyverns, though the shifter also remained out of sight. Rowan palmed his hunting knife, the steel bright in the blazing sun. High noon. Precisely why she'd gone into Rolf's office nearly 2 hours beforehand. She'd practically rung the dinner bell for the host in the dead end. She'd gambled that they wouldn't wait until nightfall, but they apparently feared the wrath of their master if she slipped their nets more than they feared the light itself, or were too stupid to realize Mala's heir would be at her most powerful.
"Do you want to do the honors, or should I?" Rowan said.
Fenris and Gabriel had risen to their feet, blades out as they monitored from a safe distance. Aelin held out her free hand, her palm scarred, and took the knife from him. A quick slice had her skin stinging, warm blood heating her seawater sticky skin. Rowan had the knife a heartbeat later, and the scent of his blood filled her nose, set her senses on edge. But she extended her bloodied palm. Her magic swirled into the world with it, crackling in her veins, her ears. She reined in the urge to tap her foot on the ground, to roll her shoulders.
Slow,
Rowan repeated, as if sensing the hair trigger that her power was now on.
And steady.
His shackled arms slid around her waist to hold her to him.
I'll be with you every step of the way.
She lifted her head to study his face, the harsh planes and the curving tattoo. He leaned in to brush a kiss to her mouth, and as his lips met hers, he joined their bleeding palms. Magic jolted through her, ancient and wicked and cunning, and she arched against him, knees buckling as his cataclysmic power roared into her. All anyone on deck saw, she knew, was two lovers embracing. But Aelin tunneled down, down, down into her power, felt him doing the same with his, felt every ounce of ice and wind and lightning go slamming from him into her. And when it reached her, the core of his power yielded to her own, melted, and became embers and wildfire, became the molten heart of the earth, shaping the world and birthing new lands. Deeper and deeper she went. Aelin had a vague sense of the ship rocking beneath them, felt the faint bite of the iron as it rejected her magic, felt the presence of Fenris and Gabriel flickering around them like candles. It had been months since she'd drawn from so deep in the abyss of her power. During the time she'd trained with Rowan and Wendlin, her power's limit had been self-imposed. And then that day with the Volg, she'd broken through it, had discovered an entire hidden level beneath. She had drawn from it when she'd encircled Dorinel with her power, had taken a whole day to tunnel that far, to draw up what she needed. Aelin had begun this descent 3 days ago. She'd expected it to stop after the first day, to hit that bottom she'd sensed once before. She had not. And now, with Rowan's power joining hers. Rowan's arm still held her tightly against him, and she had the distant, murky sensation of his coat scratching lightly against her face, of the hardness of the weapon strapped beneath, the scent of him washing over her, soothing her. She was a stone plunked into the sea of her power. Their power. Down. And down. And down. There. There was the bottom.
the ash-lined bottom, the pit of a dormant crater. Only the feeling of her own feet against the wood deck kept her from sinking into that ash, learning what might slumber beneath it. Her magic whispered to start digging through that ash and silt, but Rowan's grip tightened on her waist.
"Easy,"
he murmured in her ear.
"Easy."
Still more of his power flowed into her, wind and ice churning with her power, eddying it into a maelstrom.
"Close now,"
Rolf warned from nearby. From another world.
"Aim for the middle of the fleet,"
Rowan ordered her. "Send the flanking ships scattering onto the reef." Where they'd found her, leaving any survivors to be picked off with arrows shot by Fenris and Rolf's men. Rowan had to be alert then, watching the approaching force. She could feel them. Feel her magic's hackles rise in response to the blackness gathering beyond the horizon of her consciousness.
"Almost in range," Rolf called.
She began pulling up, dragging the abyss aflame and embers with her.
"Steady,"
Rowan murmured. Higher, higher, Aelin rose, back toward the sea and sunlight. Here. That sunlight seemed to beckon. To me. Her magic surged for it, for that voice.
"Now!"
Rolf barked. And like a feral beast freed of its leash, her magic erupted. She'd been doing well as Rowan had handed over his power to her. She'd balked and bobbed a few times, but she had the descent under control. Even if her power, the well had gone deeper than before, it was easy to forget she was still growing, that her power would mature with her. And when Rolf shouted now, Rowan knew he had forgotten, to his detriment. A pillar of flame that did not burn erupted from Aelin, slamming into the sky, turning the world into red and orange and gold. Aelin was ripped from his arms with the force of it, and Rowan grabbed her hand in a crushing grip, refusing to let her break that line of contact. Men around them stumbled back, falling onto their asses as they gawked upward in terror and wonder. Higher, that column of flame swirled, a maelstrom of death and life and rebirth.
"Holy gods,"
Fenris whispered behind him. Still, Aelin's magic poured into the world. Still she burned hotter, wilder. Her teeth were gritted, her head arched back as she panted, eyes shut.
"Aelin,"
Rowan warned. The pillar of flame began expanding, laced now with blue and turquoise. Flame that could melt bone, crack the earth. Too much. He had given her too much, and she had delved too deep into her power. Through the flames encasing them, Rowan glimpsed the frantic enemy fleet, now hurling themselves into motion to flee, to get out of range. Aelin's ongoing display was not for them, because there was no escape, not with the power she'd dragged up with her. The display was for the others, for the city watching them, for the world to know she was no mere princess playing with pretty embers.
"Aelin,"
Rowan said again, trying to tug on that bond between them. But there was nothing. Only the gaping maw of some immortal ancient beast. A beast that had opened an eye. A beast that spoke in the tongue of a thousand worlds. Ice flooded his veins. She was wearing the word key.
"Aelin!"
But Rowan felt it then. Felt that bottom of her power crack open, as if the beast within that word key stomped its foot, and ash and crusted rock crumbled away beneath it, and revealed a roiling, molten core of magic beneath it, as if it were the fiery heart of Mala herself. Aelin plunged into that power, bathed in it. Rowan tried to move, tried to scream at her to stop, but Rolf, eyes wide with what could only be terror and awe, roared at her, "Open fire!" She heard that, and as violently as it had pierced the sky, that pillar of fire shot down, shot back into her, coiling and wrapping inside her, fusing into a kernel of power so hot it sizzled into him, searing his very soul. The flames winked out. At the same second she reached into Rowan with burning hands and tore the last remnants of his power from him. Just as she ripped her hand from his. Just as her power and the word key between her breasts merged. Rowan collapsed to his knees, and there was a crack inside his head, as if thunder cleaved through him. As Aelin opened her eyes, he realized it wasn't thunder, but the sound of a door slamming open. Her face turned expressionless, cold as the gaps between the stars, and her eyes. Turquoise burned bright, around a core of silver, no hint of gold to be found.
"That's not Aelin,"
Fenris breathed. A faint smile blossomed on her full mouth, born of cruelty and arrogance, and she examined the iron chain wrapped around her wrist. The iron melted away, molten ore sizzling through the wooden deck and into the dark below. The creature that stared out through Aelin's eyes furled her fingers into a fist. Light leaked through her clenched fingers. Cold white light. Tendrils flickered. Silver flame.
"Get away,"
Gavriel warned him.
"Get away, and don't look."
Gavriel was indeed on his knees, head bowed and eyes averted. Fenris followed suit. For what gazed at the dark fleet assembled, what had filled his beloved's body, he knew. Some primal intrinsic part of him knew.
"Deanna,"
Rowan whispered. She flicked her eyes to him in question and confirmation. And she said to him, in a voice that was deep and hollow, young and old,
"Every key has a lock. Tell the queen who was promised to retrieve it soon, for all the allies in the world shall make no difference if she does not wield the lock, if she does not put those keys back with it. Tell her flame and iron, together bound, merge into silver to learn what must be found. A mere step is all it shall take."
Then she looked away again. And Rowan realized what the power in her hand was. Realized that the flame she would unleash would be so cold it burned. Realized it was the cold of the stars, the cold of stolen light. Not wildfire, but moonfire. One moment she was there, and then she was not. And then she was shoved aside, locked into a box with no key. And the power was not hers. Her body was not hers. Her name was not hers. And she could feel the other there, filling her, laughing silently as she marveled at the heat of the sun on her face, at the damp sea breeze coating her lips with salt, at the pain of the hand now healed of its wound. So long. It had been so long since the other had felt such things, felt them wholly, and not as something in between and diluted. And those flames, her flames, and her beloved's magic, they belonged to the other now. To a goddess who had walked through the temporary gate hanging between her breasts and seized her body as if it were a mask to wear. She had no words, for she had no voice, no self, nothing. And she could only watch as if through a window as she felt the goddess, who had perhaps not protected her but hunted her the entirety of her life, for this moment, this opportunity, examine the dark fleet ahead. So easy to destroy it. But more life glimmered, behind. More life to obliterate, to hear their dying cries with her own ears, to witness firsthand what it was to cease to be in a way the goddess never could. She watched as her own hand, wreathed in pulsing white flame, began to move from where it had been aimed toward the dark fleet, toward the unprotected city at the heart of the bay. Time slowed and stretched, as her body pivoted toward that town, as her own arm lifted, her fist aimed toward the heart of it. There were people on the docks, the scions of a lost clan, some running from the display of fire she'd unleashed moments ago. Her fingers began to unfurl.
No!
The word was a roar, a plea, and silver and green flashed in her vision. A name. A name clanged through her as he hurled himself in the path of that fist, that moonfire, not just to save those innocents in the city, but to spare her soul from the agony if she destroyed them all. Rowan. And as his face became clear, his tattoos stark in the sun, as that fistful of unimaginable power now opened toward his heart, there was no force in any world that could keep her contained. And Aelin Galathinius remembered her own name, as she shattered through the cage that goddess had shoved her into, as she grabbed that goddess by the damned throat and hurled her out, out, out through that gaping hole where she had infiltrated her, and sealed it. Aelin snapped into her body, her power. Fire like ice. Fire stolen from the stars. Rowan's hair was still moving as he slammed into a stop before her uncoiling fist. Time launched again, full and fast and unrelenting. Aelin had only enough of it to throw herself sideways, to angle that now open fist away from him, point it anywhere but at him. The ship beneath her, the center and left flank of the dark fleet beyond her, and the outer edge of the island behind it, blew apart in a storm of fire and ice. Chapter 36. There was such quiet beneath the waves, even as the muffled sounds of shouting, of collision, of death echoed toward her. Aelin drifted down, as she had drifted into her power, the weight of the word key around her neck like a millstone. Deanna. She didn't know how. Didn't know why. The queen who was promised. Her lungs constricted and burned. Shock. Perhaps this was shock. Down she drifted, trying to feel her way back into her body, her mind. Salt water stung her eyes. A large, strong hand gripped the back of her collar and yanked, hauling her up in tugs, in steady strokes. What had she done? What had she done? What had she done? Light and air shattered around her, and that hand grasping her collar now banded around her chest, tugging her against a hard male body, keeping her head above the roiling waves.
"I've got you," said a voice that was not Rowan's.
Others. There had been others on the ship, and she had as good as killed them all.
"Majesty?"
the male said, a question in quiet order. Fenris. That was his name. She blinked, and her name, her title, her gutted power came thrashing back into her, the sea and the battle and the threat of Morath swarming. Later. Later she'd deal with that rutting goddess who had thought to use her like some temple priestess. Later she'd contemplate how she'd shred through every world to find Deanna and make her pay.
"Hold on,"
Fenris said, over the chaos now filtering in. The screaming of men, the groaning of breaking things, the crackle of flames.
"Don't let go!"
Before she could remember how to speak, they vanished into nothing. Into darkness that was both solid and insubstantial as it squeezed her tightly. Then they were in the water again, bobbing beneath the waves as she reoriented herself and sputtered for air. He'd moved them, somehow, jumped between distances, judging by the wholly different flotsam spinning around them. Fenris held her against him, his panting labored, as if whatever magic he possessed to leap between short distances took everything he had. He sucked in a deep breath. Then they were gone again, into that dark, hollow yet squeezing space. Only a handful of heartbeats passed before the water and sky returned. Fenris grunted, arm tightening around her as he swam with the other toward the shore, shoving aside debris. His breathing was a wet rasp now. Whatever that magic was, it was spent. But Rowan... where was Rowan? She made a sound that might have been his name, might have been a sob. Fenris panted, "He's on the reef. He's fine." She didn't believe him. Thrashing against the Fey warrior's arm until he released her, she slid into the cold, open water and twisted toward where Fenris had been headed. Another small sound cracked from her, as she beheld Rowan standing knee-deep in water atop the reef. His arm was already outstretched, even though 30 yards still separated them. Fine. Unscathed. Alive. And an equally soaked Gavriel stood beside him, facing... oh, gods, oh, gods. Blood stained the water. There were bodies everywhere. And Morath's fleet. Most of it was gone. Nothing more than black wood splintered across the archipelago and burning bits of canvas and rope. But 3 ships remained. 3 ships now converging on the ruins of the Sea Dragon as it took on water, looming like thunderclouds. "You have to swim," Fenris growled beside her, his sodden golden hair plastered to his head. "Right now. As fast as you can." She whipped her head toward him, blinking away burning seawater. "Swim, now!" Fenris snapped, canines flashing, and she didn't let herself consider what was prowling beneath them as he grabbed her collar again and practically threw her ahead of him. Aelin didn't wait. She focused on Rowan's outstretched hand as she swam, his face so carefully calm, the commander on a battlefield. Her magic was barren. Her magic was a wasteland. And his. She had stolen his power from him. Think of that later. Aelin shoved through and ducked under larger bits of debris past men. Rolf's men. Dead in the water. Was the captain among them somewhere? She'd likely killed her first and only human ally in this war, and her only direct path to that lock. And if news of the former spread... "Faster!" Fenris barked. Rowan sheathed his sword, his knees bent. Then he was swimming to her, fast and smooth, cutting between and beneath the waves, the water seeming to part for him. She wanted to growl she could make it herself. But... he reached her, saying nothing before he slipped behind her, guarding with Fenris. And what could he do in the water with no magic, against a gaping maw of a sea wyvern? She ignored the crushing tightness in her chest and hurtled for the reef, Gavriel now waiting where Rowan had been. Beneath her, the shelf of the coral at last spread, and she nearly sobbed, her muscles trembling as Gavriel crouched so she could reach his outstretched hand. The lion easily hauled her out of the water. Her knees buckled as her boots steadied on the uneven coral heads, but Gavriel kept his grip on her, subtly letting her lean against him. Rowan and Fenris were out a heartbeat later, and the prince instantly was there, hands on her face, slicking back her soaked hair, scanning her eyes. "I'm fine," she rasped, her voice hoarse, from the magic or the goddess or the salt water she'd swallowed. "I'm me." That was good enough for Rowan, who faced the three ships now bearing down on them. On her other side, Fenris had doubled over, hands on his knees as he panted. He lifted his head at her gaze, hair dripping, but said to Rowan,
"I'm out. We'll have to either wait for it to replenish, or swim to shore."
Rowan gave him a sharp nod that Aelin interpreted as understanding and thanks, and she glanced behind them. The reef seemed to be an extension of the black rocky shore far behind, but with the tide out, they'd indeed have to swim in spots, have to risk what was beneath the water. Beneath the water. With Lysandra.
There was no sign of wyvern or dragon. Aelin didn't know if that was a good or bad thing.
Aelin and the Fey males had made it to the reef, and now stood knee-deep in water atop it. Whatever had happened, it had gone horribly wrong. So wrong that Lysandra could have sworn the feral, wild presence who had never once forgotten her had ducked into her long shadow as the world above exploded. She'd tumbled off the coral, the current cleaving and eddying. Wood and rope and canvas rained onto the surface, some plunging deep, then bodies and arms and legs. But there were the captain and his first mate thrashing against the flotsam that tangled them, trying to drag them down to the sandy floor. Shaking off her shock, Lysandra swept for them both. Rolf and his man froze at her approach, reaching for weapons at their sides beneath the waves. But she ripped away the debris, surely drowning them, then let herself go still, let them grab onto her. She didn't have much time. Rolf and his first mate latched onto her legs, clinging like barnacles as she propelled them through the water, past the now scorched ruin. The work of a minute had her depositing them onto a rocky shelf, and she emerged only long enough to gulp down a breath before diving. There were more men struggling in the water. She aimed for them, dodging debris until blood laced the current. And not the puffs that had been staining the water since the ship exploded. Great, roiling clouds of blood, as if massive jaws clamped around a body and squeezed. Lysandra lurched forward, mighty tail snapping back and forth, body undulating, racing for the three boats bearing down on the survivors. She had to act now, while the wyverns were distracted with glutting themselves. The stench of the black boat reached her even under the waves, as if the dark wood had been soaked in rotted blood. And as she approached the closest ship's fat underbelly, two mighty shapes took form out in the blue. Lysandra felt their attention lock on her the moment she slammed her tail into the hull. Once. Twice. Wood cracked. Muffled shouts reached her from above. She drifted back, coiling, and slammed her tail into the hull a third time. Wood tore and ripped into her, peeling away scales, but the damage was done. Water sucked in past her, more and more, tearing through the wood as its death wound grew and grew. She backtracked out of the water's pull, flipping down, down, down as the two wyverns feasting on frantic men paused. Lysandra raced for the next ship. Get the ship sinking. Then their allies could pick off the struggling soldiers one by one as they swam to shore. The second ship was wiser. Spears and arrows whizzed through the water, lancing for her. She dove to the sandy floor, then shot up, 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 aiming for the vulnerable belly of the ship, body bracing for impact. She didn't reach the ship before another impact came. Faster than she could sense, slipping around the side of the ship, the sea wyvern slammed into her. Talons tore and sliced, and she flipped on instinct, whipping her tail so hard that the wyvern went tumbling out into the water. Lysandra lunged back, getting an eyeful of it as it stared her down. Oh, gods. It was nearly double her size, made of the deepest blue, its underside white and speckled with paler blue. The body was almost serpentine. Wings little more than fins along its sides, built not for speed or cruising through oceans, But for the long, curving talons, for the maw that was now open, tasting the blood and salt and scent of her, revealing teeth as narrow and sharp as an eel's. Hooked teeth, for clamping down and shredding. Behind the wyvern, the other fell into formation. Men were splashing and screaming above her. If she did not get those enemy ships down... Lysandra tucked her wings in tight. She wished she had taken a bigger gulp of air, had filled these lungs to capacity. Fanning her tail in the current, she let the blood still leaking from where the ship's wood had pierced her hide drift to them. She knew the moment it reached the wyverns. The moment they realized she was not just an ordinary animal. And then Lysandra dove. Fast and smooth, she plunged into the deep. If they had been bred for brute killing, then she'd use speed. Lysandra swept beneath them, passing under their dark shadows before they could so much as pivot, toward the open ocean. Come on, come on, come on! Like hounds after a hare, they gave chase. There was a sandbar flanked by reefs just to the north. She aimed for it, swimming like hell. One of the wyverns was faster than the other, swift enough that its snapping maw rippled the water at her tail. The water became clearer, brighter. Lysandra shot straight for the reef looming up out of the deep, a pillar of life and activity gone still. She curved around the sandbar. The other wyvern appeared in front of her, the second still close on her tail. Clever things. But Lysandra threw herself to the side, into the shallows of the sandbar, and let momentum flip her over and over, closer and closer to that narrow spit of sand. She dug her claws in deep, slowing to a stop, sand spraying and crusting her, and had her tail lifted, her body so much heavier out of the water. The wyvern that had thought to catch her off guard by swimming around the other way launched itself out of the water and onto the sandbar. She struck, fast as an asp. Its neck exposed, she clamped her jaws around it and bit down. It bucked, tail slashing, but she slammed her own onto its spine, cracking its back as she cracked its neck. Black blood that tasted of rancid meat flooded her throat. Dropping the dead wyvern, she scanned the turquoise seas, the flotsam, the two remaining ships and harbor. Where was the second wyvern? Where the hell was it? Clever enough, she realized, to know when death was upon it and to seek an easier quarry. For that was a spiked dorsal fin now submerging, heading toward where Aelin, Rowan, Gavriel, and Fenris stood atop the reef, swords out, surrounded by water on all sides. Lysandra plunged into the waves, sand and blood washing away. One more. Just one more wyvern, then she could wreck the boats. The remaining wyvern reached the coral outcropping, gathering speed, as if it'd leap from the water and swallow the queen down whole. It didn't get within 20 feet of the surface. Lysandra hurled into it, both of them hitting the coral so hard it shuddered beneath them. But her claws were in its spine, her mouth around the back of its neck, shaking, yielding wholly to the song of survival, to the screaming demands of this body to kill, kill, kill. They tumbled into open water, the wyvern still fighting, her grip on its neck loosening. No! A warship loomed overhead, and Lysandra dug down deep, rallying her strength one last time as she spread those wings and flapped up. She slammed the sea wyvern into the hull of the boat now above them. The beast roared its fury. She slammed it again and again. The hull snapped, and so did the sea wyvern's body. She watched the beast go limp, watched the water rush into the cleaved belly of the ship, listened to the soldiers aboard begin shouting. She eased her claws from the beast and let it drift to the bottom of the sea. One more ship. Just one more. She was so tired. Shifting afterward might not even be possible for a few hours. Lysandra broke the surface, drawing down air, bracing herself. Aelin's screaming hit her before she could submerge again. Not in pain,